I am unashamed. What about you?
So we have a special guest today in the lair. Welcome, Sammy. We call this the lair. This is the unashamed lair where we hang out and talk about. We talk about a lot of stuff. We talk about Jace's stories and trips and musings. We talk about the Bible quite a bit as well. So Sammy is Dad. Tell our folks. Sammy works with you over at you and Mom over at university. Tell us about how all that.
Well, he was there when we showed up over there. And
which has been, 2 years now? Three?
Yeah.
2 or 3 years now.
Sammy's got a pretty good story to tell, in my humble opinion. But I think probably it better just let him do the talking. But he's a good brother. He's a good brother, and I'm glad he's here. So he had been very helpful for us over there when we went to university, you know.
Well, it's a unique situation. Sam, we've talked about it before on our podcast, because – You rarely see churches tend to be in the South, I guess, in Louisiana, tend to sort of self-segregate. I mean, there tend to be white churches more predominantly white or more predominantly black. But you guys are pretty much 50-50 church.
Mixed with everything.
Which is really good.
Yep. And then, way better.
And you guys do some work with some homeless people, and some people kind of are in that area. And you also have a boxing gym, which is how I first heard about you, because my son-in-law was telling me about your boxing gym. So tell us what you do there.
Yep. How you got started and converted and whatever. Just go with it.
Well, I got arrested at the age of 17 years old, and I was sentenced to 25 years federal time and 30 years state. Made some bad decisions, and I had to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And just during that time of me being incarcerated, you know, life changed. You know, I was incarcerated for 22 years, and just doing that journey of that time, you know, I had to learn a lot about myself. But during that process of learning about myself, you know, I had a few guys who really took interest in my well-being, because when you go to prison, you know, it's two ways in. You know, you can come in and you can leave out, you know, dead, or you can leave out dead, you know, alive.
Yeah.
Or you can, you know.
I like that, sir. Like, you're right.
You know, you can come in and actually die in prison, or you can leave prison and still be dead and find yourself in a cycle. Or you can come in and clean your life together and get your life together. But, you know, just the best thing that happened to me was, you know, I found God in prison.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a very unique, humble situation, because, you know, a lot of times you hear the term, you know, jailhouse religion. However, you know, my God is real, and my transition and my transformation is real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've been out of prison 5 years, and I'm still on this train, and I'm still following Christ, you know, and that's my source of power, and that's my source of inspiration. But I had started boxing in prison, because, you know, I was a fighter, you know, very aggressive young man, mm-hmm. you know, got arrested at the very young age. And I took a real great interest in boxing, but not just the competition level, but how the discipline of the sport had started to change the way that I thought and I move mm-hmm. inside of the prison. Because I was, you know, during that time, I was transferred to multiple prisons, but I ain't found myself in Angola for the longest time.
Mm.
And in Angola, it's like a world. It's a society within a prison setting, and it's, you know, over 5,000 inmates. So you're gonna intermingle with so many different races, so many different cultures, so many different believers of whatever is out there.
Mm-hmm. It almost seemed like when we were there, you're right, it was like towns.
Yeah.
Because you had the different camps.
Yeah.
And then you guys would cross paths. So it almost felt like you were, as we were traveling around and going to different places, it was so spread out over mm-hmm. such a wide range, just like a series of towns. That's exactly what I felt like.
Like
we were there.
Some kind of country.
Yeah, right.
It's definitely has so many different things that set up to where you can function as its own city. You know,
right.
It has a mail room. It has a canteen warehouse. It has a major kitchen, and then it has like the small little outs camps of things that surrounded the main prison. So it's a big cycle.
And what most people know is that the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary has a satellite there, and they actually train guys to be preachers and pastors, and they will plant churches in other prison systems out of Angola, which is incredible. I mean, it's a lot of great spiritual stuff is happening. I mean, you think about prison, like you said, being a terrible place, but you know, when God shows up, it can become an opportunity.
You're still under lock and key, but you know you're free.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, when I went there in 1996, you know, it was making a transition upon of a new ward, and he were a very strong advocate of New Orleans theology, basic college in there. And one of my mentors were a guy who were a student, and he became a minister inside there. And, you know, once he did so many years, and he was transferred to another prison to assist that prison in planting churches inside of other prisons. So
now your job now, you're out of prison.
Yeah.
But you, we got together, you and I, we talked about it. It was your idea about forming a, what would you call it?
Young
guys come in there, you know, I guess gals, women too.
We have a couple of young ladies in there, and they don't.
So tell the audience what you do when you get up in the morning. You go down there and in a neighborhood, pretty tough neighborhood.
Definitely.
So y'all's goal, how do you work it from there?
Yeah. So, you know, I am a certified personal trainer, but, you know, with me having the experience of boxing, I knew how boxing changed my life. So when I came to Monroe after being released, I saw that it wasn't a boxing facility in the city of Monroe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was a great opportunity for me to not open up a business, but also to utilize that business as a ministry too as well.
Love it.
And so, you know, when I first opened it, I really didn't have a lot of equipment in there. And, you know, Mr. Gordon at the time was making a transition from not being Gordon Dasher was making a transition of leaving the state of Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he mentioned that Phil was coming over, and he mentioned that there would be someone I can talk to. And Phil and Miss Kay, you know, they supported me 100%, you know. But before Phil took over university, we had a conversation, me and him and Matt, at Vice Ferry Road one night. Remember that night?
Yep.
And, you know, he gave me his vision and direction of where we wanted to go. And, I mean, right now today, that vision has really opened up to the point where it's like that conversation was talked about in the present time, in the past.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what our vision is. And I was like, okay. But now I'm like,
It's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's been almost 3 years and it's still going on. But also, the mentoring program has sprouted from that seed of everything that, you know, he supported me, but also the hard work and everything that all the other volunteers as well. And we deal with a lot of mentoring a lot of kids. We have kids come in, we have kids that come out, and we have kids that stay. So, you know, we utilize the skill of boxing as the tool to, you know, help them in their athletic, you know, ability. But also, you know, we just want to be positive males in the community, you know, because a lot of kids don't have males that they can talk to, whether they're a young lady or a young man. You know, I know I struggled. My dad was very supportive of everything I did, but he wasn't present because, you know, when him and my mom divorced, he moved away.
Yep.
And it was hard for me to have those conversations when I needed it and in the present.
Yeah.
So now I understand where I struggle at, and I can be more supportive to someone who I may see suffering or struggling in the same areas, you know, what I was going through at that time.
Because you're
going
to have plenty of bad influences.
Yeah.
You know, Satan's going to plant opportunities to be bad role models everywhere. So you're right. It's rare.
Yeah.
Then to have that person like you that comes in and says, look, I can tell you where this is going, you know, and I love that you're using boxing, you know, something physical to be able to get to something spiritual, you know, which is important.
Which is what all of us do. Right. Well, we use duck calls. I mean, I blow duck calls and people are like, what is that?
So in the next few days, what's coming up that you would like to be in on?
Yeah, well, also, you know, with me utilizing the facility as, you know, my employment, which, you know, I don't have a lot of income. So I cook, I work, but I also, you know, look for ways I can utilize my talent. Mm-hmm. And it was a Men's Health. Men's Health is hosting a Men's Health cover. And it's where people can come out and vote social media via social media. And it has a $20,000 reward for the one to get the most votes. Mm-hmm. So I entered the contest, and you know, it's a battle, you know, and it's a battle. You have people all over the world that's entered, but I have overcame the first two rounds, and it's three more rounds, but every week it's elimination.
I see.
So, you know, I'm just battling for it, but it would be definitely helpful for not only me to win that, but also some of that seed money, if I was the winner, would definitely go off into the program too, mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. Yep. So what we're asking for is Unashamed Nation. We need you guys to engage and vote for Sammy.
Men's Fitness.
Men's Fitness is what's coming. We're going to put a banner on the screen to tell you how to be able to do that, to be able to vote for Sammy. You need to do it. This is releasing on Wednesday, and it needs to be before Thursday, right?
Yeah. It has a deadline to Thursday. Every Thursday is they count the votes and you know, it starts over new.
Well, and what I like is that, you know, what God does through us, despite our flaws and bad decisions, is he breaks cycles. And I did a little prison ministry for a couple of years. And when you said that about those guys who would leave and come back, they were in that cycle. Yeah. And some of them, which we had a deal, like when you get out, come see me. I even had a few that it was like, meet me here. I mean, they're going to experience their new life and it never show. Yeah. And then months later, I look up in our cell, you know, once a week, and here they come. I'm like, you're back. Yeah. Why didn't you meet me? And so that cycle's got to be broken. And then I think the same thing y'all are doing, you know, you and Phil making an unlikely pair, I guess. Y'all coming in, that's just the visual of that is cool. Here are your mentors, kids. But you're breaking that cycle in a tough neighborhood and giving people a positive role model, which you're then showing them the ultimate father who loves them and is for them. So I just wanted to say we appreciate what you're doing.
Well, sir, Simon, you're doing a great job.
I love what you said. There's two ways to leave. You can die to yourself and be something new, or you can just keep dying the rest of your life. And that's what a lot of people unfortunately choose. But you chose life.
Or you can just die.
Or you can just die. And some people die die as a part of the process. Yeah. So what Sammy has done is taken an opportunity, but I love it because you don't pay back, you pay forward.
Yeah.
And so when you're working with these young people, you're paying forward the grace of God. He had grace in your life, and now you're paying that forward in other people's lives.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, commend me and, you know, congratulate me on the progress of how far, you know, they see that I'd accomplish in such a short time. But, you know, and I honestly tell them, it's not me.
Yeah.
You know, this is God working through me.
That's right, exactly.
Because it's time I was like,
I can't do it.
I can't do it. You know, I mean, even when I was going through a process of, you know, trying to raise seed money to pay for that first 6 months of rent. You know, and then personal things happen. I have to spend that money. And it's like, but it's only, you know, our Lord and Savior working through me to do this here. And that's the only person I can get a glory to.
Yesterday, when we met with the brothers, the Apostle Paul said, I have learned. So it is a learning curve here. He said, I've learned to be content. Whatever the circumstances, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned, second time he said that, the secret, and it's a secret and a well-kept one. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry or living in plenty or want. I do everything through him who gives us strength. And And Sam has proven, just stay the course and you'll be blessed.
That's Philippians 4:13.
You betcha. That's a good one.
So, Unashamed Nation, we need you guys to step up, vote for Sammy, and we're going to hopefully have him win this competition, and we'll see where God takes it from there.
Most definitely.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for coming.
Appreciate it.
So, a question we ask a lot on this podcast, because of our sponsor, Home Title Lock, is can thieves really steal your home's title? Because obviously it's a thing. And so we have a thief that's actually going to tell you what he did. He stole over 150 homes. He was sentenced to 25 years in prison. So listen to this guy.
Nobody thinks that I can take their house and borrow against the house. Oh, no, I have title insurance for that. No, it's in my name. Or he would have to get some special document. They would call me. You know, nobody's calling you. After I've stolen the title, borrowed against it, or sold the property, or done whatever I've done with it, it's 60 to 90 days to even figure out that they're the victim of this crime. You know, by that point, you start getting foreclosure notices, and you realize you've got four mortgages on your house. Not only that, you don't even own your home anymore. It's not even in your name.
So you hear that and you think, well, it can happen. So HomeTitleLock.com is where you go. You register your address. You make sure you're not already a victim. You enter the code radio, HomeTitleLock.com radio, and you get 30 free days of protection. So that's HomeTitleLock.com. Use the code radio. Yeah, that was really good, Dad. Sammy is, guys like him are inspirational because so many people, you know, are eager to write people off.
Yeah.
You know, for bad choices.
For whatever reason.
Redemption, the whole theme of the Bible is redemption. And people's lives being redeemed and then them finding purpose is powerful. And I love it. You know, Sammy cooks a lot of food over there for and gives it away and, you know, to the people that come there and just, you know, he's just got a wonderful heart. So I'm glad that we're able to help him.
I thought of that passage in John 8. You know, it's an interesting thing in John 8, the famous verse that says, "You'll know the truth and the truth will set you free," which is John 8:32. But the previous verse in 31, he was addressing the Jews who had believed him. They came up believing him.
Yeah.
And Jesus famously says, "You'll know the truth and the truth sets you free." And they're like, "What are you trying to say?
Yeah.
We don't need to be free." And he later on says they're children of the devil. Yeah. But my point is, Jesus was saying you can be locked up and out in the open.
Yeah.
And here was a man who was actually free when he was locked up.
That is correct.
Well, what is it? Galatians says the whole world is a prisoner of sin. Sin imprisons you. I mean, so whether you're incarcerated in an institution or not, if you're living a sinful life, you're incarcerated.
One of the lines I used when I went down to Angola a few times, one of the lines I used is, "Guys, I said, you're never going back down that road you came in on." A lot of you.
75% of the people in Angola will never leave it.
Lifers. I said, always remember this, though. Don't ever forget this. You can be under lock and key, which y'all are, but you can still be free.
That's right.
Even here.
Yeah.
I said, don't forget that. So the warden told me later that was piped into the death row people.
Yeah.
And he said a lot of them requested.
Some of them came to Christ.
Yeah, some of them came to Christ.
They're going to, you know, their life.
And the warden let them up to then before they wouldn't let you be baptized.
Right.
But they wanted to respond by faith to the gospel by being baptized in the local lake out there. You know, it's a swamp out in there. Mississippi River Delta, but he allowed them to go down
there. Sammy mentioned in the mid-90s, there was a warden named Burl Cain that came in, and he was there about 20 years. And he was a man of God and a visionary. And he took what was traditionally one of the toughest, most terrible prisons in the U.S.
You know, you looked around when you were down there and you could tell.
Oh, yeah. And that's what those guys were telling us. And we said, "Well, look, everybody seems so great here." And he said, "Well, you're only seeing the ones who are trying to do good. The other ones, you're not seeing them." He said, "There's some bad people in there."
Oh, when I did that two-year stint for that Bible study, I mean, multiple times my life was threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, of course, I was like, well, I always came at it from a spiritual perspective because the only thing I had to fight with because these boys worked out every day, I didn't. And he was like, you know, I'll break you in half. I was like, yep. And then I'm going to be resurrected. Then what? Because, I mean, you had to bow up to them, which they took that as a sign of strength.
Chase was going
on. And they'd be like, he's bluffing. He's bluffing. I said, I'm not bluffing. The power of God, the one in me, is greater than the one that's under, that you're under the control of. Yeah. But I had several times where it got loud, you know. And I mean, they're using four-letter words and everything else. It's like we were fixed a fight, but I was coming at it 100% spiritual. I was like, no, just kill me. Yeah. And then I'm going to come back and rain terror on this bunch. They were actually scared of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Because it's not.
It's a strange phenomenon.
It's not using the weapons of the world. When Paul said, you know, we demolish strongholds.
It's one thing to read that. It's another thing to trust it when there's no security. Because the security, when they closed the door, I looked up and I was like, oh, you're not coming in there? And he was like, no.
You're on your own in there, buddy.
Good luck. So that scared me because I thought by the time I can get security in here, I'll be dead.
They allowed them to build themselves a little structure so they could meet with pews. And they had some singers, amazingly.
They were great.
Good singers.
Yeah.
But
we probably had about 800 people in the chapel. And I mean, it was exciting, Jason. You'd have loved it because I mean, those guys were, you're talking about some serious.
Some are under lock and key, but they can still be free.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people say, why y'all do stuff like that? But when everybody looks at our society and you can point out the negatives, they're obvious. Yep. And I mean, the world is literally upside down in a lot of ways.
Yep.
But you think, you know, we introduced Jesus. Jesus can change the heart. And when you look at our crowded prisons and all that, I mean, there's a way for healing to take place and transformation, and the best way to do it is change the heart. Right. And Jesus is the best at changing the heart of anything, regardless if people are believers or not.
Yes.
Just look at this guy, 25 years in a federal penitentiary, and he has been not only stayed out of trouble, he's actually changing generations.
He's a community leader.
In a terrible neighborhood.
Yeah. When he came to me, he said, I want to start a boxing school. And I said, a boxing school? I said, well, go for it. And he said, well, he said,
I need a little help getting off
the ground. He said, yeah. I need things like a ring, a boxing ring that they go to. I said, I said, what else? And he said, you hit the balls, you know, you got them things hanging. He said, you know, you seen these things hanging from the ceiling? I said, yeah. I said, I'll tell you what you do. I said, Sammy, you go down there and you write down every piece of equipment that you have to have. Now, the ones you don't have to have, don't worry about them. But what you have to have, start a boxing school. I said, write them down. Bring me that list. And I said, research it and find out how much it costs. Yep. And then you give it to me. And I said, we'll see what we can do. So that's what he did. And I looked down the list. There's a long list of all the stuff that goes into a boxing school, you know. Mm-hmm. I said, the man wants to do that. He needs some help. So I just said, I'm here to help.
Right.
I said, order it. I said, send the bill to me.
That was a good thing. I like that the boxing, which is what he did.
So it's really grown since then.
Yeah.
And a lot of young guys, they're in there. He has some now that are coming up and are really good boxers.
Right.
Well, they're getting it on a national level, and that's why he was needing the vote to where he can. He just wanted that vote, you know.
Recognized, right.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing about it is, like he said, he's providing leadership, especially male leadership in an area that's needed. But not only that, you know, a lot of times kids, doesn't matter what neighborhood you're in, if you got too much time on your hands where you're not doing something constructive or productive, you get into some bad situation.
He saw his own life.
That's right.
And what it did to him by not having some kind of somebody to help him with direction.
Right.
And when he saw that, he joined with us and the Lord, and we went forward. So
you said it before though, Dad, everybody's got something that you love or that you're good at.
Everyone's good at something.
Good at something. And in his case, that's what it was. He figured that out.
Yep.
And once Jesus, he submitted to him. Now he's doing what he loves to do, but he's doing it for God's glory and to help people. I mean, it's just, that's what everybody has to figure out.
That's
right?
What the United States of America needs to implement.
That's exactly right, which will change everything. Let's take another break. So, Jace, we got a new sponsor that I'm excited about. It's called Relief Band. And do you get motion sick, right? You have motion sickness?
I do, Al.
Yeah, because I remember when we did that cruise that time, you were sick the whole week. I mean, it was just, you were in misery.
Something about not being able to see land.
Yeah.
And people say it's in your head. No, it's in my gut.
Because you get nauseated, right?
Yeah, I've been on rivers and creeks my whole life. But if I can't see land, it's problem. Coming out, whatever I
well,
mean.
So we got a product for you then, Jace.
Great.
If you ever find yourself in this position again, it's called Relief Band. It's the number one FDA-cleared anti-nausea wristband. So it goes on your wrist, which is really interesting because there's something in, there's a nerve in here that affects nausea that's in your wrist. I've seen before they apply topical meds sometimes to your wrist. So that's where it goes to your brain, and it blocks this nausea that you get. So if you're going to take a road trip, if you got, you know, motion sickness in the car, which I get, you need to try this product. I can't wait to try it myself. Go to reliefband.com. Use the promo code UNASHAMED. You're going to get 20% off plus free shipping and a no question asked 30-day money back guarantee. So you get to try it and make sure it works for you. Reliefband.com. Promo code UNASHAMED. 20% off, free shipping. So, Jace, you've been having some...
I've been in Colorado for...
Colorado.
4 or 5 days. So, I had an event in... Where was that named? I thought my first joke went over. It was just a disaster. Because it was...
Your first thought, tough crowd.
Yeah, well, it was Kremling, Colorado.
Kremling.
Kremling. And so, I said, boy, when I first looked at the schedule, I thought I was going to Russia. You know, the Kremlin, 1,500 people.
Not even a nervous chortle even?
I thought.
So how long did it take to loosen them up a little bit?
After that, it was fine. These people were our kind of people. And what Missy did, when she heard I was going up there, she was like, well, that's close to Vail. And of course, you know, it's brutal. In the summer down here in Louisiana,
yep,
in July, August. So the next thing I know...
But it's not in Vail.
Yeah. So the next thing I know, she and me and Karina and Cole, they're all coming. I was like, well, boy, this is awesome that they're supporting me, you know, because they don't usually go to my events, you know. Well, the night of the event, she was like, okay, the car people, you know, they're going to come pick us up because we went trout fishing. I'll tell you about that. And then she said, then we'll see you tonight. I was like, y'all not coming? I said, what? I thought you were supporting me.
Vacation time, Jace.
And she's like, no, Bonnie, which is her aunt. She's like, your assistant's coming. I was like, well, why would she come when you're here? And she's like, well, her and Gary, her husband, they're coming. Oh. And I said, I think I'm starting to figure out that everybody's planned a vacation up here around this event.
Yeah. And you're earning the money on the thing to pay for the whole thing.
Yeah, that's basically what happened. But I'll tell you this.
Welcome to my world, Jay.
You know, when we had a really nice hotel, and then the backyard of this hotel, you're looking up, I mean, we're in the Rocky Mountains here.
It's beautiful.
And it's cool. Like at night, I was like, I got to go buy something with some sleeves. I mean, it was cold. I don't know if it was so cold as it was.
And that's in July?
In July. Yeah. But you're so elevated. There was actually
they get snow in like June up there.
I was shocked that it got down to 72 last night in Louisiana. I haven't seen that in years.
I know. It's been nice.
Well, I was a little concerned at first because, like, we're pulling in the hotel when we first got there, and there was a sign that says, when you encounter a bear, and I was like, here we go. Because the first thing there was make sure to leave a path of escape for the bear. I thought.
Bears first.
Oh, boy. Here we go. But when we left, so I go up to Kremlin, which is... Hope I'm saying that right. Which was probably an hour away. They had a day planned for us, and there was a conservationist who basically had taken thousands of acres and just had one of these. He loved the outdoors, and he's like, stand back and watch this.
Yeah.
And they, every year, they'll take like special needs kids trout fishing or wounded veterans, or they have a day where they like introduce it. It was like Yuppie Day, but they didn't call it Yuppie Day. I was like, no, what is that? And it was like people who have never experienced outdoors. So there's no guide service or anything, but they asked him, they're like, well, look, we got Jace up here. He's going to speak. And he's does a lot for that community. He's like, yeah, y'all take off down there and catch all you want. So we're like, they called it world-class trout fishing. And I looked at Missy and rolled my eyes. I thought, yeah. Because I've been on some world-class, you know, fishing, and there was nothing world-class about it. But we got out there, and the guy, you know, we got the fly rods and everything. It's me and the kids and Missy. Well, he's just letting out the line, because I said, give them all a tutorial, because I've pretty well got the hang of it the last couple of years. I've done it a few times. I said, give them a tutorial how to do this. Well, that fly hit the water while he's showing them, here's how you do this, and it just... And he just, there he is, and he handed it to Missy. So Missy just bowed up on this thing, and I was like, well, that can't be a trout, because it was just massive. I mean, the
rod was
yeah, yeah, bent over, and she's trying to hoist it in. Pal breaks the line, you know, and I'm like, good grief, these must be some big trout. But I knew right then that we're just in the tutorial part, and he just got a fly in the water. We may be on to something here.
It may be world class.
And so I was like, here, let me just, I couldn't stand it then. So I was like, while you're teaching them, hand me where my rod? You know, I whipped that thing out there. As soon as I got out there, bonk, caught about probably a 6-pound rainbow trout, wow, which is way bigger than any other trout I've ever caught. And so from that moment on, once we all got lined out, it was just a series of screams and hollers from the girls. And between the deer flies and the massive trout, and then about halfway into it, I catch right at a 16-pound rainbow trout. 16 pounds.
That's a lot of trout.
Good. Well, I know you're thinking, yeah, 16 pounds. I'm going to show them this picture, and then we can put this, since I took this picture, we'll put this on the screen.
Y'all just turn them loose after you catch them?
Yeah, I had to do the event after, so I didn't have anything to do with it.
Right. Look at that thing.
Look at that. It doesn't look real.
It doesn't even look, is that normal? I mean, is that?
I asked him, I said, is this normal? And he's like, well, this guy has all this land. And you just imagine they do everything in their power to make sure they have a healthy trout
it's population. Like us and ducks, right? I
mean, yeah. Even though they're free.
That is a bull and a pretty little river, too.
Oh, I know. Well, it's like a little Oxbow River off of the Blue River. And but he said, look, they can go downstream, they can go upstream, but if you just take care of a place and do everything you can do to have a healthy trout population, really fish it much. You get this kind of stuff.
And you're putting them all back.
So. Well, you got to remember, we saw moose while I was there. We saw black bear, which I was a little nervous on that. But I was like, where's your weapon? I was like, all I got's a Bible. He was looking at me like, he's like, I'd say go, run to the truck. I thought, okay, that's the plan, huh? But, you know, they had deer everywhere. Well, then I noticed one place, I was like, this looks ducky. And about the time I said that, because it was like a, looked like a pond right beside the river. 5 mallards came out. They were wintering there. And I thought, boy, this boy here now.
He's game paradise.
He got it figured out.
Yeah.
So that was fun. Missy was the only one that never actually landed a trout, but she either had her line broke or just lost them.
Yeah.
But every time it was a big trout, and like the 16-pounder I caught, it was probably a 30-minute fight.
Yeah.
30 minutes.
Because if you bow up, you're going to break something.
You just got to let them go.
Yeah.
I mean, when I, because you don't really set the hook in the trout fishing, I just come back, but it was just dead weight. And I was like, well, this can't be a trout. Right. It's too heavy. But that went on for 3 or 4 minutes. And then all of a sudden, he just decided he's going to go 50 yards downstream in about 4 seconds. So he pulled all my drag out, and I'm now running, falling down, getting wet, chasing him. But I thought, there's no way this line's going to hold. Of course, they had leaders. And when I saw the leaders, I thought, what do you got that for? They're not going to hit this because they're going to see it. Yeah. But I know why now, because they were like, we got some bulls. You're gonna need that.
Yep.
And the only reason I landed that fish is my net man, just after 30 minutes, I'm exhausted. And I was like, just try to stab him with the net on a flyby. And he just got lucky on the thing, barely would fit in the net.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He just made a really good stab yeah. and he got him in the net and got it, fell back on the rocks, him and the fish in the net. I grabbed him, took a picture, and like, here you go. I was like, good work.
Let's take another break.
What?
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
So then we go to this, what was the name of this restaurant? I wrote this down. When we got to Kremling, we went to this restaurant and I had a first. It was called Dean's West. And they were like, oh, this, they've had it for I don't know how many years, you know, but it's where everybody gathers. When we pulled up there, there was a motorcycle gang there. And I was like, well, this is, what kind of place is this? That was my first. They're all coming out. And so I looked, and this girl went, Jace, you know, a member of the motorcycle gang. I was like, yep. And there was a guy beside her. And I mean, it made me think of the movies. Remember the Clint Eastwood when he was in the movies?
The monkey.
Any which way. Yeah, yeah. Any which way.
Any which way but lose.
And every which way you can. Yeah. The second, they were, you see those, Phil?
Nuh-uh.
Well, he
never saw those movies.
He was a boxer, but it was
like street
fighting. Street fighting.
He was a street fighter.
He was a street fighter, and these motorcycle gang got after him, and he had a monkey named Clyde, and he'd say right turn, Clyde, and that orangutan would put his fist out and just club somebody in the jaw.
You never saw those movies?
No.
They were funny. Phil,
you need to watch those tonight with Miss K. They're hilarious. And look, remember when he said
it was all the old guys from the Westerns were the motorcycle people. Huh. The old guy that had the squaw, you know, the innkeeper there, he was in it.
My point is, when I saw the motorcycle gang, I have not watched that movie, either one of those, in 20 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
But when I saw them, that sound went off in my ear. Nah, 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 nah. Because every time they show the motorcycle gang on the movie, they play that. The best scene of those movies, by the way.
And by the way, the leader of the motorcycle gang was the guy that was doing business with the Comancheros. Remember the old guy shot him, you know? That was the main guy on the motorcycle.
Yeah,
I got you.
So, but I was going to say the best scene I like from those movies is when he said, and because I don't know how they did this. I've been on TV. I know how it works. But Eastwood said, Clyde, which was the monkey, he said, strip the caddy. They had an old Cadillac there. And that monkey walked over and just stripped the car. He was tearing off doors, throwing his fenders. And I'm like, now, how do you fake that? So I took the picture with the motorcycle gang. I brought up Jesus. But when I got to know him and meet him, it was like I was in that movie because they were all a bunch of goofballs.
Right.
You know, it seemed ironic. But, and also learned.
Is that one of the movies where he got in the tractor trailer rig and then ran over all their motorcycles in the parking lot?
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I hope y'all watch it. It's good, clean fun.
It is pretty fun.
And
Eastwood's attempt at humor. He did a couple of
loved it.
I did too.
I mean,
Sandra Locke.
It's got redneck tendencies. It kind of appeals to that crowd, but I think yuppies would find it interesting because Missy did.
Yeah.
I mean, from a distance. But so I also learned something else. In Colorado, when they say you want jalapenos on that, you know, around here we got the jalapenos that have been jarred or whatever, and they got a little heat to them. But there,
fresh.
Every time I came across a jalapeno, it was searing heat, sweat pouring, nose dripping. Like, what have I done? Because they only had three. I got this huge burger, and there was three little bitty slivers of jalapeno. Well, I just picked one up, put it in my mouth like an idiot. And it was like, ding, 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 ding. And I made the same mistake back at the hotel. I ordered some, you know, chicken wrap or something. She's like, you want jalapenos? I was like, yeah, because I wasn't thinking. Same reaction. So I thought that was interesting. So I get to the event. Here, Jesus, the thing I wanted to share.
Did you ever say the motorcycle people knew you?
One of them had a Duck Dynasty shirt on. Oh, okay. I said, this is weird. He's like, yeah. I said, did you know I was coming? And he's like, coming where? He didn't even know where he was. I said, you have my shirt on. It was a picture of me. It was that one that said, if you don't know what you're doing, do it quickly or whatever. And so he looked down. He was like, will you sign this? I said, yeah, might as well. I mean, you're talking about random.
Yeah.
But I did the event. And for the first time in 30-something years about speaking about Jesus, I was reading my Bible on the way up there because I don't have notes or anything ever, but I always, it's like I have my walk-up music, my contemporary worship. I have the same system. And I just read the book of John. And I mean, that's what excites me because I tend to be, you know, laid back. But I left it in the car. And so I got to looking around for my Bible because I don't really read it because I'll quote it like you do when you speak at these events. It was an outdoor event, so you don't have time to say, hey, turn your Bibles over to. Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a festival, and we're out there on the side of a mountain. And so I'm looking around. I was like, I cannot. I panic. I don't have my Bible. But there was a guy standing there who was a volunteer, and he said, well, you can use mine. And I loved it because he – And number one, what do you have his Bible there for? I mean, he wasn't speaking. He was just a volunteer.
And he carried his Bible.
Yeah, I said, well, why do you have your Bible? He said, I don't leave home without this Bible. Well, he pulled his Bible. It looked more worn than mine. I was like, perfect. And it was the NIV.
I didn't think that was possible. Let's take our last break.
Well, after the Russian joke bombed, then I held that Bible up. And I said, for the first time, I actually don't have my Bible. I borrowed this, and I made a point that I said, do you realize the only thing that I can think of off the top of my head that's better old or used than brand new is a Bible?
Good point.
A used Bible is way more valuable
than a new Bible.
Than a brand new one.
That's right.
So that line got a lot of, I got some hallelujahs, and I thought, okay. We got some believers out here.
So from there, Russian jokes. Let's just go all in.
So there, from then on, it went well. But so after it's over, I'm 2 hours away from back where I was staying. My family's abandoned me. You know, they're off somewhere. Who knows? And so these two guys are going to give me a ride back. And they said, we're going to take you on the scenic route, which was a dirt road down the mountain, which was crazy. Yeah. I mean, we actually stopped one time because I was like, I got to get a picture of this. And he's like, well, there's nine guys standing there where you take the picture. And I said, what's that? What's that matter? He said, well, they're on the other side of the rail. I said, what does that matter? And he's like, well, they have to be drunk or high. Because you'll see it. So we pulled up there because we could see them on the other side of the rail. I'm telling you, I took a picture of it. There are thousands of feet above this, and they're on the other side of the rail. I mean, one slip, and they're just dead. So I got out. I said, you boys must believe in a resurrection. Of course, they all looked around at me, you know, like, who is this guy? One of them said, why do you say that? I said, you're on the other side of the rail. I said, yeah. And it was kind of weird. I was like, well, you must not be scared to die. You're either high on Jesus, or you're just high? Because I said, I think we're just high. Yeah. I said, well, if I were y'all, I would consider being high on Jesus. And that's where I let that get my, the ride. Was like,
there's a few that do lose their life on the edge of the cliffs up there.
Yeah, why would you do that?
You know, they're all about the selfie, Jace. These people put themselves, then they die all the time in these, you know, because it's a cool picture that they can post on their social media of them hanging off the side of a mountain. And, you know, all it takes is one misstep and you're done. But that's how much they love taking selfies.
I wanted to tell y'all this. So we go down and the two guys that are the guy driving was a butcher, and they were great guys. And so they don't really, we just talked about life and they're obviously believers. I was thinking, how did they get nominated to drive me back, because I felt terrible. They're driving 2 hours away, and he basically butchers all their meat they kill in the winter for the hunters. But we got right close to the hotel, and he said, I wanted to say something, and he kind of started getting choked up, you know. He said, I just wanted to thank you and your dad, and when you get back, he said, I want you to tell your dad. And he said, because the reason I volunteered to give you a ride back here, he said, I was a raging alcoholic for years. And he said, I was in a rehab somewhere mandatory. He said, but one of the other guys there, he said, gave me a copy of your dad's book. And he said, I read it in there, and it led me to pursuing God. And he said, I came to Jesus. He said, I've been sober 7 years. But he said, then I bought your book quickly thereafter. And then he converted the other guy.
Huh.
And so they were carrying me. So I thought, you know, a lot of times you don't think doing something like a book or whatever, because it's not really you. You know, you're giving God the glory and raising that. So that was kind of a real touching moment.
Yeah,
there.
But you could see that the fruit of it.
Great story.
Well, yeah, because he said, you know, one of the biggest things that led him to turn his life around, he said, when I read your book, I realized he had a son. And he's like, my behavior and my abuse of alcohol is affecting him. Because then he read it from my perspective, which I never really made that connection. But he said, then when he got to Jesus, he's like, well, this is awesome.
Yeah. You know?
So it was a cool story.
Yeah. And of course, we got, speaking of books, Dad's got Your Daily Fill, which is, I guess, in the background over here. That is in Walmart. You can still get that. And we got a new one coming out next year, Uncanceled, which is now almost completely finished. Really a good book. Gordon helped us write it, my uncle, and it's really good. And then Mom, we're going to have Mom and Lisa on next week on the podcast. They've got one they're working on called Sister Roar. So we're going to have them tell about that. So we got a lot of good stuff in the queue.
So this guy, he told me the greatest cell phone story that I've ever heard. And I thought, I'm going to have to tell my dad this story. And he's like, yeah, I want you to tell your dad. Because he's like, I know your dad doesn't do cell phones. He said, so you tell him the boop, prank. Boop, 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 boop. He said, tell him the prank. He said, tell him, you know, I appreciate his book because that led me, you know, to the Lord. He said, but then tell him this cell phone. So this guy, of course, now he's trying to look kind of like Sammy, our guest. He's looking for young kids he can mentor or whatever, and he takes them in outdoors and hunting, and then he'll give them a job because he has a butcher shop. So he said he hires this kid. He's like 17 years old, and he's like, every time I turn around, this kid's on cell phone, and he's like, it's just making me angry. and he's like, the kid is always bragging about the girls he's meeting, and he said, I kept telling him, I mean, how do you even know that's who it is? It could be, you know, Samantha could be Sam from, you know, and the kid's like, hey, you do your thing, old guy, and making fun. So he said, you know, I just thought I'm going to do something about this. And so he got a girl, the owner of the butcher shop, to like befriend this kid and get all his information. And so once he got the information, he sets up an account. He gets a picture of about the same age girl, and he befriends him. And look, he takes it hook, line, and sinker. They become an item. And this guy telling me, he's like, he's the worst girlfriend I ever had. He said he's texting me at all hours of night. He's like, look, the only place he could get Wi-Fi at where they work is his house. He said he would go in, take off from work, and send me a message from my house. He said, look, I paid him one time. He cashes the check. Then he sends me a picture of himself without a shirt on with all his cash. He said, that I just gave him. So he thought, you know what I was going
to
do?
You're talking about getting to know your employees at a whole new level.
So there are items. So it comes up to where they're going to meet. He's going to meet the girl. He's telling all the employees and his boss. He's like, well, we're going to meet. Well, it's his boss that he's going to meet. He said, my first thing to do, he said, I was going to call the police to just set up and then act like this was a 12-year-old girl. Yeah. He's like, but my wife said, look, we want to teach him, but we don't want to send him into trauma here. So what they decided to do is he said, I'm just going to pull up in the truck with him. Because he was so excited for everybody to meet the girl.
Yeah.
He said, so they're sitting there, and of course, she don't show. And then he's like, man, what's going on? So he's like, well, let me text her. Whatever time he would send a text or whatever, his boss's phone would go off. You know, he's thinking. And finally, he looked over, and he just held the phone up. And he said, in that moment, he just turned like a ghost. I mean, he realized the whole time, I have had a relationship with my boss.
He was in a delusion state.
But you know what he said? He said it was the greatest thing that ever happened to him. It embarrassed him so much. He said he was never the same in a positive way.
Humbled him.
And he turned out, he said now he's some kind of Air Force leader in the Air Force or whatever. Yeah. It was a great story. And I thought, well, man, kudos to you for going through that. But we need to get some kind of faith-based group to do a TV show on that.
That's right. Yep.
It would be awesome.
It would be great. And then the life lessons that you get that come out of, you know, because they find this stuff way too important, you know, this social media and all that.
Nothing is real.
It's all an illusion. Yeah. Be careful who you're sending love notes to.
That's exactly right. Maybe your boss.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.